Getting control of all your stuff matters, says author Gretchen Rubin. It makes us feel more in control of our lives. It does something else. For a lot of people, a sense of outer order contributes to an inner calm. A friend of Gretchen's once told her that she can focus on switching careers because she had finally cleaned out her fridge. Clean things out, and suddenly your mind is freed for some really big decisions. Gretchen Rubin writes about all this in her latest book, Outer Order, Inner Calm. She lives in New York, but she was raised in Kansas City, and she's a Winstead's fan. One of her previous bestsellers was The Happiness Project. Gretchen, what a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
I'm so happy to be back in Kansas City. I love coming back.
You and your sister still meet at Winstead's, right?
Yes, she's here. She's meeting me here. We'll probably go there for dinner tomorrow night.
It still has a pull on you after all these years.
We cannot resist. I mean, it's one of a kind.
Let's get to your new book, Outer Order, Inner Calm. Why does getting rid of clutter seem to be such a hot trend right now?
You know, I think it's a couple things coming together. I think one is people feel overwhelmed. There's so much information coming at them. There's so much uncertainty in the world.
Yeah.
I think people are trying to find a kind of equilibrium, and it's sort of, I can't control the world, but I can control my desk. And if I create, order, that might help me get a sense of calm and serenity that I'm yearning for. But then I also think there's part of it's demographics. Like, you know, a lot of people are in the season of stuff. They have little kids, and they're also getting stuff from parents who are dying and downsizing. And there's just a lot of people managing a lot of stuff, and they're looking for ways to create more order in their lives.
You know, Marie Kondo is probably the most well-known name in the decluttering world right now. She advocates for one very concrete way to clear clutter and organize. How does your approach differ?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Marie Kondo, and obviously her approach works really well for a lot of people, but it's very, very specific. You attack items in a specific order. You ask yourself whether things spark joy. If you're a woman, you unpack your handbag every night. Like, she's got a real system. And in my observation, that works really well for some people, but for other people, not so much. Marie Kondo says you should take everything out in a category and look at it. And I see the benefit of that. But I think some people would have nervous collapse if they had a pile of like all their books in one place. And you can do it a little bit at a time. So I really think, you know, figure out the way that works for you. And don't feel discouraged or like you're a helpless case if someone tells you that this is the right way and that right way doesn't work for you. And so I think it's more helpful to think about, well, what works for me? Maybe I want to do a lot at once. Maybe I want to do a little bit at a time.
So you lay out several approaches here and let people decide for themselves in a sense.
Yeah. In the book, I have like 150 ideas. And the notion is like you just flip through it and see what works for you, because almost everybody sees things that are like, yes, they get fired up and they're like, I could do this. I could try it this way. And so you try the approaches that feel like a good fit for you.
How do you define, Gretchen, outer order?
You know, I think we achieve outer order when we get rid of everything we don't use, don't need, don't love. Because sometimes we have things that we don't use or need, but we just love them. And I think we have room in our hearts and our homes for things that we just love. And then there are the things that we use and we need. But the things you don't need, use, or love, that's like the charging cord to the device you got rid of 2 years ago.
Yes.
You know, that's just the stuff that's clogging the system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you get rid of that stuff, that is when you feel like you know what you have. You know, stuff isn't in your way. You're not digging your way through a bunch of clothes that don't fit or a bunch of papers that you don't ever even look at.
Yeah. Your first step for clearing clutter is making choices. What questions should we be asking?
Well, making choices is hard. And I think this is one of the reasons that a lot of people accumulate clutter, because it's easier just to jam something under the bed than it is to decide, do I want this thing? If I don't want this thing, what do I do with this thing? If I give this thing away, who do I give this thing to? Can I recycle it? Should I just toss it? Making choices is very difficult. And I think one question to ask is, does this thing energize me? Because the things that we use give us energy. They move around. They're useful. And we feel like, yeah, this plays a role in my life. Things like the bread maker that you haven't used in 5 years ago, that's the kind of thing that just drains your energy. It just sits there like a lump. You're like, what am I going to do with that thing?
Yeah.
you know, should we use that thing? We could use that thing. Have we used that thing? You know, all those questions. It's like, make choices.
You know, what is it about getting older? I'm at a point in my life where we've raised the kids. Mm-hmm. The house is sort of reached its full. And my wife and I are going through this thing. But there is something about getting older. You've got so much more stuff than when you were 25.
Well, and that's really true. And especially if you haven't moved. I mean, one thing that many people comment on is every move, you do a decluttering, because usually it's like, oh, it's not worth the effort and the money to move this thing, so you get rid of it. But if you stayed in the same house 30, 40 years, and you have a basement and an attic and a garage and all that, there's a lot of stuff that you can fit in there, even if it doesn't look that cluttered. It's just got a lot of stuff in it. There's a book about Swedish death cleaning. And this is a practice of really trying to go through your stuff yourself so that you don't leave it for people to have to deal with after you die. And it can take a long time. But I think you really serve yourself better and the other people in your life if you're doing just whittling away at it a little bit at a time.
My guest this hour is Gretchen Rubin. Her latest book is Outer Order, Inner Calm. What are some of the general guidelines, Gretchen, that you offer in here for those who want to take on this challenge of decluttering?
Well, one thing I would suggest for people is don't get organized. A lot of times when people, you know, get the bug to create outer order, they think, I got to get organized. And they run to the store and they buy complicated hangers or elaborate sets of containers or binders. I don't know what it is about people and their binders. They want to buy binders. But if you go through and get rid of everything you don't need, use, or love, you may not need to get organized. I was talking to a guy the other night, and he had this elaborate system of binders that he was going to, like, organize all his papers finally. He was drowning in paperwork. And then when he stepped back, he realized a lot of that paperwork was related to pet insurance. And he's like, I don't need the paperwork for pet insurance. And by the way, it's all online anyway. And so instead of having to organize all these papers, he realized he could just get rid of them. So the first thing to do is don't get organized. And then really ruthlessly ask yourself, do I need this thing? Do I use this thing? Do I love this thing? Because a lot of times we just get used to the stuff. You know, it's just been there for 10 years and you hardly even notice that it's there. And so you really do have to discipline yourself to pick it up and think, you know, just for example, just recently here, I just wrote a book about this. And just last month, I was going through our kitchen and I realized we had two garlic presses. And I thought, well, certainly we don't need two garlic presses. So I gave away one garlic press. And then I thought, we don't even need one garlic press because we buy the jar of like minced garlic for the people who are lazy. I'm like, we don't even need one garlic press. And yet we had two for probably a decade. Like, what, you know, you just have to constantly be saying to yourself, why? What is this thing? And if we're not using it, let's put it into the hands of somebody who will put it to good use.
You know, one big source of clutter that everyone, I think, deals with is clothing.
Yeah.
You offer a whole set of questions in the book that might be asked when it comes time to tackle the closet. Questions like what?
Like, does it actually currently fit? You know,
imagine that.
That's a big one.
Does it actually currently fit?
And remember, if you think, well, I want to keep these things because maybe one day I'll get down to that size, think, if you do get down to that size, are you going to want to wear those clothes? Are you going to want to get new clothes? You know, something that's been hanging in your closet for 10 years, you're not going to want to wear that, even if you do get to that size. And then do you actually wear it? Because sometimes we hang on to things that we don't actually wear. If you have many examples of things that are basically interchangeable, like 10 black cardigans, you know, are you going to wear your ninth favorite black cardigan? Now, if you wear khaki pants to work every day, maybe you need 5 to 10 pairs of khaki pants. But if you just wear them occasionally, you're only going to wear your favorites and you can let go of kind of your backups. And there's also a funny question, which is to consider the X factor. And this is when you ask yourself, if I were walking down the street and I ran into my ex, would I be happy that I was wearing this item of clothing, or would I wish I were wearing something?
Where did that idea come from?
You know, I mean, we've all been there. You know, and there's things where you wear them and you're like, yeah, but I wouldn't want to be cut dead wearing this thing. You know, and so maybe you got to let it go.
Why do you think people want to keep, you know, ill-fitting shirts and, you know, the participation ribbon from elementary school? What is that about?
Well, you know, well, one thing is a psychological phenomenon called the endowment effect. And that means that we value things more once we own them. And so once we own something, we give it more weight. So let's say somebody offers you a free promotional mug and you're like, do I want a mug or not? You're like, eh. But if you take it and that's in your cabinet, you will start to value it more. And so we kind of have this default to keeping things, to hanging on to things. So we have to overcome that in order to relinquish. And I think that, and then there's many reasons. There's emotional connection. Every toy that my children played with feels important to me. We want to keep things out of respect for a giver. If somebody gave us a gift, even if we don't like it or use it. It might be related to a past self. Like if I got a participation ribbon for swimming, I might think, oh, I keep meaning that to go back to swimming for exercise. I did so much swimming as a kid. I should do it again. And so it's related to a past self or a fantasy self. Like,
Yeah. Oh,
I bought this treadmill because I was totally going to exercise at home. And yes, I've been using it as a closet, which seems to be the most typical use for home exercise equipment is as clothes hangers. But I have the fantasy that one day I would use it.
You know, we're a big book family, and the thing I find myself getting the most attached to is the children's books that we read to our kids back in the day. And a lot of those books are just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, kids' books have come from a place of no return to really the incredible pieces of art today. And I look at those books and I think, I cannot get rid of these books. And I've got a ton of them, you know?
Well, so I went through exactly the same thing. I'm a huge fan of children's literature and young adult literature and also picture books. And so I think, well, do I really love these things? And I have a giant shelf of picture books because I love them. And I'm like, I want to go back and reread Bedtime for Francis. And I want to go back and reread Ferdinand. I want them because I want them. Mm-hmm. I love them. But I did get rid of three giant boxes because I was like, there's a lot of those books that I don't love.
Right.
I just want to keep the ones that I'm really engaged with and get rid of the ones that were sort of just the ones that you would read because you're reading 15 books a night. You know, you need a lot of fillers. And same thing with adult books. If I think that if I loved a book, if I'm going to go back to a book, you know, I'm not a believer in, you know, keep one shelf. We got shelves and shelves and shelves of books, but the books we want.
So we're talking here about cluttering and decluttering. Gretchen, how well do you follow your own rules?
Well, you know, my problem is the floor drobe, not putting my clothes away. So that's something that I really, really have to work on.
The floor drobe.
But I have to say, working on this book really made me do a dramatically better job of outer order. And it makes me happier. I have a lot less stuff clogging my house and my office.
Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Gretchen Rubin is back to explain why organizing our things can bring a stronger sense of control over our lives. Here's a tough one. Why should people make their beds?
Well, first of all, I want to say, if you don't think you should make your bed, if you don't want to make your bed, if it makes you happy not to make your bed, don't make your bed. There's no magic to making your bed.
Yes.
The fact is that for most people, or at least many people, making their bed gives them kind of a disproportionate boost of energy and cheer. A lot of people say to me, I make my bed and it just makes me feel like I'm starting the day right. When I come back at night, my bedroom feels more calm and inviting. It's a little action that gives you kind of a big spike in just cheer and energy. But there are many people who say, you know, oh, I don't understand why you should make your bed every day. You just unmake it every night. Or, you know, people are like, I had to make my bed every day growing up, and now I'm an adult and I do what I want and I don't want to make my bed. I'm like, well, then don't. The reason to do things like this is because they make us happier, healthier, more productive, or more creative. If it's not something that moves the needle for you, don't waste your time.
Well, here, help me with this one. A lot of folks about my age have these giant CD collections, okay?
Yeah.
I've got a streaming service now, so I don't need my CDs. I don't play my CDs anymore, but I'm a big jazz guy. I got a bunch of stuff that's kind of, you know, neat and rare and all that stuff. What do I do? Doc, help me here.
Well, if you never use it, the ones that you don't use, I would give those away because you don't use them. Now, it is true that we often do use our possessions to project our identity into our environment. We like to show people who we are, and we like to see ourselves reflected in our things. And so if your collection of like the super special CDs gave you pleasure as objects, then I would say keep those. But that's probably a small percentage of your overall CD collection.
Right.
So get rid of the ones that aren't important. You know, it's like, okay, you don't need the White Album, you know? and just keep the ones that are special if they do serve that function for you. But it might be that you get rid of all of them. Often technology means that we don't need them at all and we never look at them. If they're put away in back shelves or in boxes in the garage or wherever, you know, then you're not engaging with them at all. And I would say get them out there because probably other people would take pleasure in them.
Your point is don't store stuff up in the attic
yes.
because that means you're never going to use
yes.
it. And so
yes.
that's a self-defeating proposition.
Yes. Be very aware of store. Be very wary of storage.
Yeah.
Because unless it's like seasonal clothing or holiday items, usually when we store things, we just mean like we want to get them out of sight. And like you just forget what's there. One of my suggestions is to be a tourist in your own home.
Yes.
Which means explore that back shelf. Explore that back room. You know, what's going on under the bed? Like, you know, have you looked in that cabinet for the last 2 years? Because if you've got stuff in there you don't even remember, it's not serving you. And so, like, let it go.
You know, somebody said to me a great way to get an outsider perspective of your own home is to bring in a real estate agent
yes.
and have him or her take a look at your place and say, okay, if you want to sell your place and stage your
yes.
house, here's what you got to think about.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great exercise. And I think you can even just pretend to be that person yourself. Often we get very accustomed to the way things are, to our own clutter, and it feels right. But then when we imagine ourselves as someone else coming into our space, whether it's like, I'm imagining that I'm having a big party and all these people are going to be walking through my house, or I'm selling my house and my stager is going to tell me what to do, or, you know, a prospective buyer is coming in, or even taking a picture of it and looking at a picture. This gives us a kind of emotional distance from our stuff, and that often allows us to see our space in a new way and to see
that's
opportunity. Because then you're like, why is there all that stuff on the top of the fridge? It's like,
yeah
that's not a good place for stuff.
Yes.
Like, get that off there.
Yeah. You know, so let's just assume you've gotten rid of much of the clutter. The next step is organizing. What are some of the most common pitfalls at that point, Gretchen?
Well, one thing is, and I've made this mistake myself, don't label anything miscellaneous. I once made a folder called Important Current Documents, and I never looked at it again for like 18 months. You know, it's like don't use these placeholder names. They don't mean anything.
Right,
you know, make something labeled. And you want to be organized, but you don't want to be too organized. Sometimes people kind of get swept up into the mania of creating order, and they do things like alphabetize their spices or have too many categories of Legos or too many files, you know, too finely distinguished. And then it's very hard to maintain those. And it's kind of fake work or make work. You want things to be organized enough so that you can find them easily, but not so organized that it's a hard system to maintain.
Yeah. One key in all of this is know yourself and know those around you.
Yeah.
What are you talking about there?
Well, you know, a lot of times we assume that everybody sees the world the way we do, and it's just not the case. And for example, with outer order, people really want to get to different destinations with outer order. So some people are simplicity lovers and some people are abundance lovers. And simplicity lovers are people like me, and I like bare counters and a lot of empty space on the shelf, and I don't like a lot going on. And, you know, one little vase with one little flower is a simplicity lover. But then there are abundance lovers, and they like abundance and profusion and choice and collections and a lot of stuff on the coffee
yes.
table and a lot of stuff on their desk. And they like piles of things with unexpected juxtapositions. So it's not that one person's right and one person's wrong, or one way is the right way or the better way. We want to get to different places. What to me feels like beautiful emptiness might to you feel stripped and bare.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem comes when a boss says something like, well, a cluttered desk is a cluttered mind, and we're going to have a clean desk policy in this office. Well, that would work for me because I'm a simplicity lover, but you might be an abundance lover, and that might be very contrary to what would make you thrive.
I was going to say, I come from a lifetime spent in a newsroom, and it was always amazing to me to walk around the newsroom and look
yeah.
at different people's
yeah.
desks and how they approach their lives.
Yeah.
Some wanted stacks of paper surrounding themselves.
Yes.
They couldn't see anything. Others wanted nothing. And the variety was just unbelievable.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think even abundance lovers don't want clutter, because clutter is stuff you don't need, don't use, don't love. I mean, having, you know, the old device that doesn't work anymore sitting on the shelf, that is not abundance. But the fact is, when you clear out all that stuff, abundance lovers are happy to have a lot more left over.
Best-selling author Gretchen Rubin is my guest. Her latest book, Outer Order, Inner Calm. You know, Gretchen, besides clutter in our home, many of us are dealing these days with thousands of photographs and computer files. How about dealing with digital clutter?
When I speak, I often say to people, what do you think is worse in terms of a clutter challenge? Physical photos or digital photos? And I would say it seems like it's pretty evenly divided between what people feel more overwhelmed by. You know, it's very hard, and I think there's no magic one-size-fits-all answer. Some people just buy enough storage that they can save it all and then find what they want. I like to turn digital photos into physical books because I feel like that way I have it curated and organized and turned into physical form, which I like better than just having it as a file. When you look at something like email, people use it in such different ways. I mean, a lot of experts say don't use your email as a to-do list. That's, for me, like probably the most important function that my email serves is a kind of running to-do list and like kind of an open loop reminder. So it's really hard. But I think what we need to remember is technology is a good servant but a bad master. And we need to think mindfully about, how is this working for me? How do I need to take control of it and not feel like all the default settings are just my fate? So if you feel like you're constantly distracted by notifications, turn off your notifications. If you feel like there's a soul-sucking app, delete the soul-sucking app. If you feel like you've got too many photographs, then use an app where, you know, periodically you go through and get rid of all the ones except for the very best ones. I think it's about thinking about where you want to go and how to get there rather than just feeling just like, you know, you have no control where this machine is going.
You believe in having both an empty shelf and a junk drawer.
Yeah.
Help me there.
Well, this isn't for me, but I love my empty shelf. I guard my empty shelf. I'm married to a guy. He's one of these guys where he's like, hey, here's a good place for this thing. I'll put it on this empty shelf. So I have to guard it very vigilantly. But then I like a junk drawer, too, because there's all that stuff where you're like, where does this thing go? I don't know, but I want it and I need it. And I, you know, and then when you don't know where something is, you're like, well, check the junk drawer. And there it is. And I kind of like the unexpected juxtapositions of the junk drawer.
Your final step in all this is adding beauty.
Yes.
Why is adding beauty important?
Well, you know, we want more from our spaces than just to have them cleared out. You know, we want beauty. And whether that's choosing a signature color and really, you know, amplifying that presence of that color, or adding a touch of nature, that's very satisfying to bring nature inside. Often things look better arranged on a tray. Like if you've got a bunch of coffee-making stuff, it's like, put that stuff on a tray. It just looks far better. These are small, easy steps that we can take, and they can sort of lift our surroundings to more pleasant, and that's important.
You know, we were talking a few minutes ago about desks and whether people like a cluttered desk or an empty desk. There is this school of thought out there, and I've heard this before myself, that messiness breeds creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any conflict between having a tidy space and blocking creativity?
See, I just don't think there's one best way. I don't think you can say messiness equals creativity, because that's just not so for so many people. There's a fascinating book called Daily Rituals by Mason Curry, and he goes through all the work habits and life habits of more than 150 very successful artists, scientists, writers, painters, and what you see is that they have wildly different habits. Some were simplicity lovers, some were abundance lovers, some drank coffee, some drank vodka, some worked by themselves, some worked in the middle of busy studios. But what they had in common is they all figured out the environment in which they did their best work, and then they created that environment. And so I think the question for the layperson is not what's best in abstract, but what works for me. I can assure you that messiness does not lead to my creativity.
Yeah.
But if you tell me that it makes you feel more creative, I trust your judgment about what works best for you.
Now, what about this era that we're living in right now of Sam's Club and Costco?
Yes.
You know, you go and you don't buy one tube of toothpaste. You buy 19 and you got to store them somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, that sort of changed the math for a lot of people, too.
Yes. And that's hard because then you have to manage that stuff. One thing you can remember, if you are the kind of person who walks into a store and buys things in anticipation, like this would make a great birthday present, or, you know, when winter's here in a couple months, I think this would be really useful. Remember, you can store it at the store.
Mm-hmm.
You can leave it there. They'll hang on to it for you. They got it put away very nicely, and you can wait until the need arises. Because I think a lot of times with stores like that, you think, oh, all this stuff looks so useful, but do I actually plan to use it this week? A lot of times, no. It's sort of a preparatory kind of purchase. So wait until the need arises, and then figure out a way to store all your stores in your own house.
Can you do that at Costco? Can you go to a place and say, hey, store this stuff for me?
Well, they'll hang on to it until you buy it.
Well, until they buy it.
Well,
okay.
Don't buy it. You may never need it. That's a way to save money. Don't buy it. A
couple of other things that you talk about in your good book here. What's the 1-minute rule?
This is a rule that anything you can do without delay in less than a minute, just go ahead and do it. So if you can hang up your coat instead of throwing it over a chair, if you can rip open a letter, scan it, see that you don't need it, and toss it in the recycling, go ahead and do it. And the one-minute rule just gets rid of that kind of those tiny tasks that are sort of the scum of clutter on the surface of everyday life. And, you know, it takes less than a minute to throw a couple dog toys in the basket, but it gives you a disproportionate lift.
And how about the power hour?
Power hour is another way of tackling these little tasks that pile up, because things that can be done at any time are often done at no time. So I leave my shoes out on the kitchen counter next to the coffee machine because I'm like, I got to go to the shoe place. But they stay there for weeks or months because I'm thinking, when am I going to go to the shoe place? So power hours, you keep a list of those things. And for just an hour, you know, a minute, an hour, these are things that even people who are very, very busy and overtaxed can manage. For that hour, you do those little tasks. And what you find is in a month, if you've done power hour every weekend, you'd be amazed what you can get done in
That's
4 hours.
Yeah. Gretchen Rubin's podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin. What a pleasure to have you here. Always good to see you, Gretchen.
So fun to be here. Thanks for
you
having
bet.
Me.